Accession number 28361, Reel 11.
General Julian Thompson, Reel 11. What did you think the enemy would actually be doing when you were, once you were in place? Did you have any ideas of them undertaking any active operations?
Well, my perception was that they'd be watching us to see what the hell we were up to. A, to keep out of our way,
yeah.
And B, to try and inflict damage on us if they could, and in fact they never did. Mm. They had fired on our predecessors a number of times, mm. and actually fired on them while they were in these wooden huts.
Yes.
But they never actually inflicted any casualties. Mm. So we expected them to do that, though they never did.
Mm. Would this just be random firing?
Just random firing, yes. We expected them to ambush our vehicles. In fact, none of mine ever were, but other people in the commando were ambushed, but we never were for some reason. And I suppose that was our expectation, that all the time we had to be alert that they might attack us and ambush us or make life unpleasant for us. Mm. In fact, they didn't.
Mm. What did you actually do then, day to day? What sort of operations did you conduct?
We had the sort of things we were doing. We'd have a sort of clearance patrol which would go around our perimeter to see if anyone had been there in the previous 24 hours. Is there any signs of anybody, you know, eyeballing us, having a look at us? So that was a daily and sometimes twice daily effort.
Did you have a defended perimeter?
Only in the sense that, I mean, we didn't have a proper wire around it. I mean, anyone could have got through it. We had an inner wire around our buildings. Mm. And of course we had sentries all the time. I can't remember how many, but we had an OP on a little hill behind us, which was there, manned 24 hours a day. We had no night vision equipment in those days, of course. We had trip flares around our perimeter to give us some kind of warning if somebody got close.
Mm. How far out were they?
Oh, not very far. I mean, if you're talking about 10, 15 yards.
Oh, yes.
So no great distance out. And of course, the place was overlooked from hills some distance away, so anyone with a pair of binoculars could watch what we were doing quite easily, and that's one reason why we would not only do patrols of our own perimeter, we'd go up and patrol the high ground that overlooked the camp. I mean, on the whole, we were okay because the monastery had deliberately been built on the highest piece of ground in the locality. But there were other bits of ground which were almost as high, which could look at us from some distance away.
This is defensive security patrolling, really.
Defensive security patrolling. So that was one thing that would be going on.
What strength would you send out on such a...
Well, a clearance patrol, we have about four chaps.
Four chaps.
Yeah. Four chaps, five chaps.
And they go around a sort of perimeter of the high points. And
oh, no. The high points, you take out about six or seven chaps.
Yes.
But your own sort of what I would call clearing your own backyard daily would be about four chaps. Because, I mean, they were within shouting distance of the main base, so they were perfectly okay. And then we would do longer patrols into the villages or to places where we thought that we might get a contact. Mm-hmm. And one of the things one was looking for was hides. Mm. And was there a hide in that place? Mm. You had no intelligence about it being there. You just thought, well, that's a good place to have a hide, so we'll go and have a look and see if there is one there.
What constitutes a good place to have a hide, then? What would be the characteristics of a likely place?
Well, possibly a place where they didn't have to do much work to construct it, so where there was an existing cave...
Yeah.
Or sort of hole in the rocks, or a place where they could the ground was soft enough for them to dig, because they used to dig their hides in, and so they obviously weren't going to dig themselves into solid rock. They'd have to make rather a lot of noise doing it, and so quite often hides would be in valley bottoms or near valley bottoms where there was a bit of soil.
This is so geological.
It was geological, really. Yeah. Unless it was a natural cave. Mm.
What about in the villages? In
there were certainly
the
villages. There were hides in the villages. And that picture there, of that soldier that I showed you, quite often, and certainly ones later on I can talk about where we'd very successfully pulled in a whole stack of them from a village. Mm. They were actually in hides in the village itself. And all the old tricks, of course. I mean, the place where they would put a hide would be under the fireplace. Mm. So the hole would be covered with a slab of stone, but the axes would be down through the fireplace. And they'd have a fire going on top of it.
Mm. Well, a lot of priest holes were reached by chimneys, weren't
yes,
they?
Yes, yeah, exactly.
So, places like that, relatively accessible places, on these speculative searches, I think one can call them it's informed speculation, really.
Absolutely, yeah.
When you went out on such patrols, which were searching or looking for hides, how many men would you have on one of those?
Oh, on one of that, where you were sort of, as it were, out of support reach from your base, I wouldn't take out less than a section of six or eight chaps.
Mm. What was your overall strength then in the platoon at that time?
I suppose my overall strength was about 50, because I had two platoons, you see.
Yes. And what sort of effort were you able to generate from your two platoons in terms of offensive patrolling, as it were?
I could normally put out two patrols a day, something like that. Mm. Bearing in mind that you one's got your own perimeter defence and your OP, and then the chap's got to have some sleep, so that's sort of, you know, twice that number of people minimum. Then there's patrolling, and then there would be things like vehicle escort. So if you were having to go and send your collect your rations, no helicopters. Mm. So every few days you'd collect mail, rations, and any other goodies. Mm. So there are two vehicles, drivers, escorts. Mm. So you actually bought up your 50 people quite quickly doing that sort of thing.
Effectively, it's a sort of 20% effectiveness in terms of patrol strength on that basis.
Yeah. Yeah. 50. Yes. Unless you were doing an operation where everyone was turned two to do it.
Yeah.
And except the chaps left behind. Mm.
And so you'd send out when a patrol went out like that, would it be just for the day, or would you spend nights out?
We'd spend, sometimes it'd be just a day, sometimes we'd spend a whole night out, sometimes we'd spend a couple of days out. Mm. Not long. We didn't do hugely long patrols that went on for days and days and days, no.
I mean, if you were going out to on foot to cordon or observe or search or visit a village, I mean, would that take you a day to get there or a matter of hours?
It would take you, you'd allow the whole a day for the whole operation, and to get there it would take a few hours, depending what route you went, and how sort of tortuous the route you chose for yourself in order to make it more difficult for them to predict that you were coming. And of course you do, and then that would take a day. Now sometimes we patrol the villages at night because we'd hope to catch chaps moving around, so we'd infiltrate a village at night. And hang about in the shadows for several hours, hoping to catch some, you know, Eukateris visiting his girlfriend or coming to collect some rations.
Because that must have been their main vulnerability, the administration side of getting food.
Yes.
Because, you know, if they were in the hide of the bottom of a valley, how else could they get?
Well, they'd have to either go and collect it, or they'd have people come and drop it off.
Yeah.
So they would use shepherds and goat boys who would drop food off under a certain tree or under a certain bush.
Mm. But I mean, that sort of deposit is also vulnerable, isn't it?
Indeed, absolutely, yeah.
And it's a dead giveaway.
So, in fact, I think, you know, this is in retrospect, but they spent a lot of time in the villages because it's much easier to administer themselves in the villages, and living out in a hide was actually rather a waste of time.
Indeed. I mean, you're safe, but you're ineffective.
Yeah, sure.
The other thing about living in a village is that if the locals are disposed to your cause through fear or inclination, then they're your main source of int, aren't they?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah.
What about the dogs?
Because dogs were a problem at night, as you say. The villages always had yapping dogs. Mm. And so getting into a village at night it was pretty rare that you didn't get your arrival announced by the dogs. I mean, occasionally you got away with it, but on the whole, the dogs would give away the fact you were about. Mm. And so the trick, of course, was to have some people ostentatiously leaving others behind.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
In the hope that they'd think you'd gone away.
Now, you also mentioned ambushes. Presumably this would be on trails you thought.
Yes, indeed.
How many men would you send out in ambush?
Again, about half a dozen.
Yeah.
Bearing in mind that the strength of the enemy wasn't... You weren't going to find yourself having a platoon marching into your ambush. Mm. You were only going to have sort of two or three people, probably. Mm. And the less people you were doing the ambush were, the easier it was to conceal them.
Yeah. And would these be sort of standard ambush positions that you take up?
Yeah. Okay. You'd have cut-offs and traps in the middle.
Yeah. How long would you stay in position?
Sometimes all night. Mm. Sometimes you'd go in during darkness and come out again before it got light. Mm. And again, there wasn't a problem of moving around at night that you could have in some situations, because you weren't going to bump into... others of your, you weren't going to bump into own forces, because I knew exactly where all my ambushes were.
Yeah.
And there wasn't anybody else operating in my area, so there was no problem of what they now call deconfliction.
And did you ever have any contacts with setting these ambushes?
No.
What were your comms?
The comms we had were the 31 sets, which were pretty ineffective in that country.
Yeah, trees and mountains are bad.
Yeah, absolutely useless. Mm. And of course, the comms from my base back to headquarters was I think, a 62 or a 19 set, which is the old Second World War vintage vehicle set. Mm. And again, it wasn't a problem there because it was static.
Yeah.
And the signallers had plenty of time to sort of erect the right aerials and tweak them so that they could get through. And there's enough power in a set like that to get through. Mm. And that was on 24 hours a day, that set.
Mm. On balance, were you more active by night or by day?
I would say half in half. Mm. Both.
And did you ever set up ambushes for daylight or...?
Not many, because I reckon that getting to them, you would be spotted.
You assumed you were under observation.
And I assumed we were under observation. Sometimes we'd set up ambushes. For example, that bridge, I quite often had ambushes on the high ground above it. Particularly when I knew that my vehicles were going to be using the bridge.
Picketing the heights.
Yeah. And of course, people visiting me, I'd also have to take account as well. So my troop commander would get on the blower and say, I'm going to come and see you tomorrow, or whatever. Or CO coming to visit you.
How was command exercise then? Did you send in a daily sit rep?
I sent in a daily sit rep, yeah.
Now, one problem in this sort of work, counterinsurgency, is that if it's successful, nothing happens. The enemy is intimidated into an activity, and your enemy then, as far as the troops are concerned, is tedium, because they're endlessly patrolling, going out in ambushes, and it palls after a while.
Sure.
It's rather quiet sort of fun, and there's no excitement to
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
And then they start losing their edge of attention, and that puts them at risk. How do you counter that kind of thing?
Well, by trying to switch their duties around, so that they're not always doing the same thing. Mm. B, not using the same people to go to that place all the time, so they're not always visiting the same village. C, by occasionally running trips down to the beach, which was quite a long way away, but I'd run a truckload of guys down to go to the beach and have a swim. Mm. We had films. Mm. We had a projector. And with our rations, we'd collect a film occasionally, so that would show that. I think that was about it, really. You just had to try and keep them as busy and happy as you could. and the breaks, of course, occurred where you had major operations, where you were part of something bigger, and you're operating sometimes in a different area. You were within the commando's area, and sometimes even outside it, in the brigade area, and then everyone was doing something totally different, and so that was another break.
Were there many of those large operations?
There were two or three. The largest we did was an operation called Operation Kingfisher, which went on for a very long, I can't remember how long it went on for, but I think it was about a month. And so we were actually living out in the field, sleeping under our ponchos for about a month.
What were you doing on that? What was the
That was a tip-off that Grievous was in a certain place. And so it was a big brigade-scale operation. It was a brigade cordon and search. And we, the whole commando was involved, and we left rear parties, you know, behind in our main locations. Obviously, we couldn't just abandon them. And we drove by truck, I remember, at night, down towards Limassol, because it was in the foothills, near just outside Limassol. And we then debussed and then marched in for the rest of the night to set up the cordon. And then we then squeezed the cordon in like that, and then patrolled inside the cordon to try and find... and he was there, actually. He got away.
Did you bump anybody while you were doing those patrols? Or did anyone try and come through the cordon?
Not to my part. Some people, they tried to get out in other people's cordons.
What was the terrain like there?
Oh, it was less rugged than the terrain we were normally operating, but it was still quite sort of up and down. It was sort of foothills, really.
Yes.
And quite a lot of cultivation in terraces. Mm. And I don't know what they were cultivating. I think there were carob trees and olive trees and olive groves, and I didn't think there was any kind of grain being grown there.
Now that makes movement strenuous, doesn't it?
Oh, yes, particularly at night.
And it makes it difficult to move silently.
Very difficult. Yeah. And the other thing we did was we mounted ambushes inside the cordon to try and catch them when they were moving around at night. Mm. And in fact, we got fired on by the Argyles. I was in by Mad Mitch, actually, who was commanding the rifle company at the time.
Mad Mitch nearly bagged you.
He nearly bagged me. Luckily, we were in a sort of the place we'd set up the cordon, the ambush was in a sort of what I would call a nullah or a little ravine. Mm. Only half the. The height of this room,
about 3 foot deep.
Mm-hmm. And what happened was that this company, I guess, obviously heard movement, and it was probably a goat or something, and they decided to open up the whole bloody company, so the bullets were cracking over our heads. We were all right.
Was this when you were squeezing in?
This is when we were squeezing in, yes. Mm-hmm. So people were in a different place each night.
Yes. That makes coordination more difficult.
And the coordination was not good. Quite frankly, I didn't think.
Mm. Is this due to inadequate liaison? Or
I think it was inadequate liaison, probably. Mm. I don't know, but that's how it seemed to me.
Mm. How long did this shooting go on?
It seemed to last forever, but I suspect it was a couple of minutes.
Mm. How did you manage to get it stopped?
We shouted stop, you know, in English.
Yes.
So they did. The jocks eventually recognised their own language, I think.
Well, if you count it as being their own language.
Right.
So that Operation Kingfisher, out for a month or so.
It was about a month, I think. Yeah. It seemed to go on forever.
Lying in wait.
It was quite a long time. Yeah. Yes, and then we'd have nights off.
Yes.
So the commando, you weren't in the cordon all the time.
Ah.
You relieved people. Mm. So, and I can't remember how long one was in the cordon for, but towards the end, my troop, because we were then operating as a troop, with the three platoons, was quite a lot of the time going in to do the night ambushes, and so you rested during the day and went in during the night. Mm. And that was the first time I ever came across a night site. They produced, and it was very experimental. They produced two new things I'd never seen before, because we still had the old number four in those days. They produced an SLR with a infrared night scope on it, and it was very, very large and very bulky, mm-hmm. and you had a what was effectively a big torch buttoned onto the top of it, which threw an infrared light, and then you had a scope which would pick up the infrared when you illuminated it, and it looked green. It was all sort of green and yellow was the picture you were getting. And we had that, so we had to quickly learn how to use an SLR, mm. which we'd never seen in our lives before, mm. and how to use this night scope. And I can't remember how long we had it for, but it was given to us because we were doing most of the night work.
Was it effective, the night scope?
Oh yes, I mean it was nothing like as good as the sort of night sights you have now. But it would light up with infrared. It was like shining a big torch. I mean, it was a fat thing. It had a front about that size, and it was about that long, I suppose.
Bit cumbersome.
Very cumbersome. Mm. And it had a battery pack, which I think it was sort of connected to. You wore it on your belt with a wire, mm. and it would light up. It was rather like turning a big beam torch onto something. Mm. Only it was infrared, so they couldn't see it, of course. Mm. And then you could see what you were illuminating. And I can't remember what range you could look out to. Certainly, sort of 25 yards, that sort of distance, mm. you could see. And I think it would have been perfect if anyone had walked about and into the area, we would have picked them up.
But I mean, surely at night it's your ears that really matter.
Oh yes, of course.
You have moonlight all around.
Absolutely. One wasn't using it to scan with, no. in that sense, but if you'd heard movement, you would have pointed the torch and picked it up and then been able to shoot them. One of the problems of that one encountered in those days on cordon and searches and ambushes at night was you didn't have a night sight.
Yes.
So you were actually sort of shooting at shadows, effectively. Mm. Mm. And all sorts of tricks, like, you know, chalking the back of your foresight. Mm. So you had a white blob which you could put onto the target. Mm. But it was very rudimentary stuff. Mm. And certainly, I think lots of people missed because we didn't have any decent weapons to use at night.
Well, you have to put a flare up, don't you?
Well, you had to put a flare up, yes. but again, the putting up of a flare would warm the chap. Mm. I mean, if you were firing a very specific, a bang, the chap throws himself flat, and where is he? And you blinded yourself, and you probably can't see him. You see.
Yeah. Mm. What did you think of the SLR, this being your first meeting with it?
I thought it was okay. Mm. I mean, I'd never used it, mm-hmm. but it seemed to me to be a rather good weapon and would give us a decent rate of fire compared with the old number four, where you had to sort of work your bolt and one shot in the chat. If you missed, that was it, probably. You'd gone.
Certainly at night.
Certainly at night, yeah.
Whereas with an SLR, you could get, what, three rounds and...
Well, you could, you know, it wasn't automatic, of course. Oh, no. Yes, probably yes. More.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. So, Kingfisher, you'd done the cordon and so forth,
yeah.
And then presumably you were back into your own area based in the monastery.
Yes, we lived out in on Kingfisher because we were quite a long way away. We were 20 miles away from our... We couldn't go back every day, or 30 miles, I think. Mm. So we lived out, and we became more and more... sort of comfortable, as you do, you bed yourself into where you are, and we went on to having been cooking our own meals on hexi burners. We then went on to having sort of central troop cooking.
Yeah.
Fresh rations arrived, you know, so give us a bit of a break from compo. Mm. And then eventually the operation packed up and we all went back to our bases.
Mm. Had anything changed while you've been away in that month?
Not anything that I remember. Mm. And then, very soon after that, at Kingfisher, I mean, about a month, I suppose, or a few weeks, we went on another operation, which was much more successful, which was again a brigade cordon and search. Mm. And by that time, I had a new troop commander. I mean, the previous one had been very good, but this chap, perhaps because he was fresh to that, they came up with rather a good way of doing what he called snap cordons, where... And we were given much more freedom of action to operate within an area. And what he did was, he said, what we'll do is we won't put cordons out before we go to a village. We'll do it from within the village. We'll drive as if we're going to drive through, so they'll think, oh, well, they're not going to do anything here. Mm. And then on a signal, everyone will jump out of the vehicles and establish a quick cordon round the village from the inside, as it were.
Like a bomb burst.
Like a bomb burst. And on that occasion, we pulled... That was when we had our, you know, big success. We pulled in about five of them because they had been so taken by surprise that one of them was actually still out of his hide and was running away and was grabbed. Mm. And then we found two or three others in their hides in the village itself. And this was in the middle of the day, and it was sort of midday.
Mm. So how many of you were there involved in that?
Oh, that was a troop operation, so there must have been 80 of us, something like
80.
That.
80, so that's a considerable convoy of
vehicles. Yeah, of vehicles,
Eight to ten vehicles. And was this village in your area?
It was in the troop area, but it wasn't in my area.
Not your platoon area?
It wasn't my platoon area, no.
Was this operation conducted on the basis of INT, or was it just...
Yes, it must have been, because otherwise they wouldn't have stood a whole brigade to do these cordons and searches. Mm. And it was targeting certain villages. Mm. But as I say, my troop had this idea, instead of trying to put a cordon in at night, which the dogs would give away, and then someone would fall over, and or the shale. There's a lot of shale.
Yeah.
You get shale slides and things like that, which would give away the fact you were around. He said, "We'll go on as if we're not actually going to stop in this village. We're going to drive off to another one, and then we'll put a snap cordon on." Mm. And it was great success. Mm.
And what was your platoon's part in them? Were they?
We were the searchers. In that particular one.
Yeah,
and so it was one of my guys who nabbed this guy running away.
He was legging it,
so he thought, then.
So that was automatically suspicious.
It was automatically suspicious, yeah.
Would he have been safer if he hadn't?
He would have been far safer if he just sauntered away, but he panicked.
I'm trying to get a picture of this in my mind, that the convoy drives in, stops in the middle of the village street.
Yeah.
Is this a mountain village like
this? Yes, a mountain village. So it's you're not talking about a mass of houses, you're talking about a sort of ribbon of houses with a coffee shop and a church. And then there'd be some side alleys almost, rather than streets.
Yeah.
So the furthest from the main track through that any house would be, I suppose, 50 yards or something like that.
Down an alley,
yeah.
Truck stop in the middle of the village.
Everyone just bomb bursts out. Yeah.
And they're running off to the flanks.
And they're running off to the flanks. And then the searchers who stayed in the middle go through the village house by house, looking at each house to try and find hides.
Okay. So this chap panics and runs away. Is he one of those who's got his photograph in your wanted book?
Yes.
He was.
We discover that. Not because the chap said, "Oh, it's him, I'll grab him," but because he ran.
Ah. And was he physically grabbed, or was he shot?
No, he was physically grabbed. Physically grabbed. He wasn't armed.
He wasn't armed?
No.
And what did he do when he'd been grabbed?
Did he
say it's a fair cop, governor?
No, he spoke Greek, you see.
He
spoke Greek, so he may... I don't know what he said in Greek. But this particular occasion, we had some special branch policemen with us.
Yes.
And so he was whistled away and interrogated in the back of a truck.
Oh.
And then the search continued, and as I say, we picked up four or five of them. Mm. And they had been involved in a lot of bombing activity, throwing bombs at vehicles, and not at us, but other people.
Had that been in the area? Or
in that area, yes. Yeah. They were quite a well-known sort of gang. Mm.
And when the other members of this gang were picked up, was it because this fellow in the back of the truck had been squeezed and had given away?
Yes.
Oh.
A combination of that and good searching.
Yes. Does good searching involve a lot of destructive...
Yes. I mean, we were far... I think we were more heavy-handed than you would be nowadays.
Mm. I mean, what do you go around tapping walls and floors?
Tapping walls and ripping the floorboards up, if necessary,
if
you thought there was something there. Mm. And taking large cupboards to pieces and moving stuff to see what was behind it.
Mm. What hides were they in, then? What were the...
They were in hides which had been rather like a fireplace hide, where they had... They were actually... which had been dug out.
Oh.
It wasn't a cellar in the sense that they went to a cellar, because that would have been too obvious.
Mm.
They had taken the soil out, because a lot of these houses didn't have cellars, they were just built onto the earth, and they dug up a place inside which they hid in, and they obviously took to the hides when there was a danger. They didn't live in them all the time.
Well, were the hides big enough for all five of them to be in?
No, they were in different places.
So were these one man?
They were one and two man hides.
What did they have in them? Did they have any home comforts?
They had a little bit of. It was not much. I mean, they'd have a sort of a couple of blankets, a mattress to lie.